Louise Wiles and Evelyn Simpson are co-founders of Thriving Abroad. Currently based in the UK, they have a total of 40 years of expat experience. They're both qualified coaches, and they've combined their coaching skills and their experiences as expat partners to create Thrive. Thrive is a program that helps partners of expatriate assignees to overcome the challenges of identity and purpose they often experience when they move abroad and to create expat lives they love. Thrive kicks off on March the 3rd.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxas.
Welcome, everybody. Today, I have with me two beautiful ladies, Louise Wiles and Evelyn Simpson. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
thanks.
So, how are you, both of you, doing? I know both of you are in different parts of the UK. Is that correct?
We are. I'm up in Edinburgh. This is Evelyn speaking. I'm up in Edinburgh, which is actually not too far from where I grew up and where I went to university, but I haven't lived here for the last 26 years. And I'll let Louise tell you where she is.
Okay. Well, right. You kind of draw a line south and just keep going. I'm down in the very south of the UK.
Okay.
Near Portsmouth, on the south coast.
Nice. Well, I did a little bit of an introduction to what both of you do, but I feel like you got both of you would do it better than I would. So why don't you start, Louise, and tell us about who you are, what you're doing, and I'll move to you, Evelyn, and then maybe both of you can discuss how you met and where how you got to where you are now.
Okay. I first moved abroad about 20 years ago now. My husband's job took him to Spain, and after a year of thinking about it, I finally followed him. Actually, for me, it was quite a wrench to give up my career in the UK. It took me about a year to make the decision to do that. But then I moved, and Madrid, what a fantastic city that is, so not a bad place to move to. And then since then, we've moved pretty much every 3 or 4 years, all in Europe, though. I haven't traveled sort of between the continents. I stayed on this one.
Right. So
it's in some beautiful places, and Madrid, as I said, the Portuguese island of Madeira, Lisbon, and then last year we moved back to the UK in August. So actually, Evelyn and I both moved back at pretty much the same time, which is rather quite surprising, really. It surprised both of us because it wasn't on the cards, but we kind of both, well, on the cards, it wasn't on the long-term cars, I should say, but you know, we both last year decided that was the right move for our families, and so we moved back to the UK. And the reason for my moves have always been my husband's, so my husband's career, and we've made the choice to support that career and move as a, well, initially as just me, but then we had children, so then the family as well. Got two daughters, one was born in the UK and one was born in Portugal, so whilst three of us moved home, our little one didn't. She moved away, and she still talks about Portugal as being her real home, not the UK.
Okay.
Evelyn.
Yeah, well, from my perspective, I grew up in a teeny little place in Scotland, which is officially a hamlet, which is even smaller than a village. And somewhere between there and starting work, my vision expanded, and I ended up going to university in Edinburgh, then moving to London, and then pretty much as soon as I graduated, I went with my two suitcases and moved to New York. And I ended up working there as an investment banker for almost 10 years, did my MBA at Columbia there, which is also where I met my husband. And I probably still would have been in New York if I hadn't met him. But he's Australian, and he was moving off to Hong Kong. And so I decided that I would look for a job there and move there about a year later. And since then, our daughter was born in Hong Kong. We moved to Switzerland, where our son was born. And then we've lived in China, back in the US, in Michigan for a while, and Belgium. And as Louise said last summer, we moved to Scotland. And so although it's home for me, it feels a bit weird after 26 years. And neither my husband nor my kids have ever lived here. So the kids are living in one of their passport countries for the first time in their lives. Professionally, I resigned my job when our daughter was born, and just before we moved to Switzerland. And I was pretty happy at home with the kids for a few years, but I realized that I needed to have a professional life too. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but it's enough to say that the road to starting Thriving Abroad with Louise has been pretty long and twisty, and there have been a few kind of detours and dead ends along the way. But yeah, here we are with Thriving Abroad, which we set up really to help people like us, expat partners, because we realized that a lot of people move overseas to accompany their partners for international assignments, and somehow along the way, perhaps it's because they can't work or they have to rethink things professionally, or they decide not to work for a while, but somehow they lose that part of themselves along the way. And so what we really help them to do is find that part of the experience that's for them, and really build meaningful lives for themselves whilst they're overseas.
Wow, loved it. I mean, as both of you were talking, I'm reminded of the experience of my mom. I saw my mom, go through the retirement of her career and, doing a lot of, the same things you were doing. So I'm very curious as to, it seems like Evelyn and Louise, but both of you had different experiences having to let go of a certain career. What was that mindset like? I know it took you a year, I think, Louise, you said?
Yeah, it took me a year to decide to leave my sort of corporate career.
Yeah.
It was a tough decision, because in a way it felt that I was giving up it was something that was important to me. It was a job I enjoyed, for sure. But once I'd made the decision, perhaps it was probably quite emancipating in a way, because it meant that I could, then rethink. Although, a bit like Evelyn, my rethinking sort of went in a number of different directions, and I retrained and taught English in Madrid. That was the one thing I did there. And then I decided to redirect my career completely and did the psychology degree I always wished I'd done, and then a master's in occupational psychology. So I very much used the experience to my advantage there. But then after that, finding a role that could use that sort of academic qualification and could travel with me was quite difficult. And it took me, it's taken me 5 or 6 years to develop it to a point where I feel really comfortable with it, and also to develop something that travels. I mean, that was really the key. I suddenly realised that my husband, he was a TCK, and he has this kind of wanderlust. So I kind of, we're back in the UK. I'm not sure, I doubt it. And he travels for his work, because that's what, that gives him his he manages to get out.
Right.
Get abroad. And so I felt I needed something that I could just take with me, pack in my suitcase and would come to. And that has been part of developing my career.
So it sounds like it initially, I mean, it was very hard, because obviously you work hard for something, and then now it's like you're faced with a decision to give that up, and then you also have that dynamic of the love of your life, your partner, and it's there are certain factors, family, and all these things to think about, and yeah. what do you give up? But and then it's sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, this is a thought that just struck me as you said that there. You know, the one thing I've had to say to myself, and the one thing my husband has never done is tell me that I should do it. It's always been, you know, had to be my choice. I've always known that if I really wanted to, I could say no. So each successive move, we've sat down and talked it through. But even knowing that, it's quite difficult to say no because you're, you know, jeopardising to a certain extent someone else's career.
Absolutely.
But I've always said to myself at that point, well, you're making this choice. You can say no. And he's always said that to me, and I haven't said no. So, you know, it's been my choice. But there, yes, on a bad day, you know, there's a bit of resentment there sometimes, I should say. I mean, which is, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But occasionally I do think, well, if I hadn't, you know, where would I be 20 years on? You know, what kind of career would I have in the corporate world now? I always imagined my life, I would have a career. I never imagined that I would have time when I wasn't working. I was always very sure I wanted to work and have a career. And I imagined, you know, it would be in a corporate environment.
Right.
But it's not been, and I don't regret that now. There have been times, perhaps, when I have, but now I don't. No, I love what I do now.
It's good to hear. Now you, Evelyn, you did have some time. I don't know if was it a lot of time in the corporate world. I know you did investment banking.
Yeah, I was in investment banking for 12 years.
Okay,
I worked for predecessors of what has now of banks that have been merged into JP Morgan Chase, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
For me, I think though it was a little different from Louise, because at the point I moved to Hong Kong and was working there, I was doing insolvency work for Asian companies, which was pretty much soul destroying. And then I had, because I was just traveling constantly, and my husband was too, and we were doing really tragic things like meeting in Jakarta airport to have a cup of coffee and a cuddle. It's kind of like, oh dear, this is really bad. So I'd moved over more to the administrative side of the bank, but I had realized that once our daughter was born, I realized that there was no way that I wanted to continue working the kind of hours that are necessary to succeed, even in the more administrative side of an investment banking environment. So, and I have to say that I am forever grateful that I left my investment banking career behind, because I don't know how we would have survived as a family with me doing that kind of career. It requires 100% commitment. So for me, by the time we were moving to Switzerland, it was kind of time for a rethink anyway.
Yeah.
And so I was quite grateful to just take a step back, focus on our daughter, and then of course our son was born, and you know, I did voluntary bits and pieces here and there, and enjoyed some of that, didn't enjoy some of it so much, but you know, you kind of get into the way of doing things that way, and then suddenly you wake up and you realize that you've neglected this professional side of yourself to a large extent for years. And so that's when I started looking at what else could I do. I did some psychology courses. I trained as a yoga teacher, which I love, and I still from time to time do a bit of yoga teaching and still practice. But I realized that opening a yoga studio is not exactly a portable career, so that's never really come to anything. But then I eventually landed on coaching, which is something that I had done informally, both with other expats and way back when in my career with junior staff members. I trained as a coach. Louise and I both started businesses individually, And eventually, through doing a piece of research together, we came together and started talked about, and that eventually did create our own company, which is Thriving Abroad.
Boom. And so it was right there. Now, you met doing research together. Was that in a particular country or was that in an online format?
We met online through LinkedIn. There was a lady on a forum of someone who was working in HR who said, "What is it about expat partners? You get them a visa and because they say they want to work and then they don't work. What is it? Do they even really want to work?" And Louise and I both, I think, saw red separately from our little businesses. I was in Brussels and she was in Lisbon at the time. So we had our own coaching practices then, and we both saw this and went, "Oh my goodness, it's way more complicated than that." And so we started talking to each other via LinkedIn, and I can't even remember which one of us said, "Do you want to do some research around this?" But whomever did inspired the conversation, and we both jumped on it and did the career choice and the accompanying partner survey, which we published in 2012.
Wow, that's good. That's quite the story there. It always seems, you know, there's always a problem that, you know, whenever you kind of encounter a problem that you want to fix, that can often spawn into a business idea or a passion. That certainly was the case for me, as you both found that earlier. So I always love hearing that point, that genesis, when the business was formed. So that's great. Now, your niche, both of you, is expat partners, and that's different from the expat population as a whole. So what makes the expat experience different for the expat partner when compared to the expat employee?
Yeah, I think, I guess the key difference is that the expat employee is moving usually with a defined role. And we're talking about someone who's relocating for their career with the, you know, the job already defined. And so for them, they're moving into a work environment that, you know, has a schedule and a routine, a 9-to-5, in which they're meeting colleagues. Okay, it might be a new environment, so we're not sort of detracting from the challenge that entails at all. But, you know, they've got something that's defining their lives, the role, their identity that comes through that role. Whereas a partner is often giving up, if they've had a career, giving up the career before they relocate abroad, as I did, actually, not so much Evelyn, but initially for Evelyn anyway, but moving abroad, giving up the career, moving into a new community, perhaps a new country with a different language, as I did, and so having to immediately try and create a new environment, a new lifestyle for themselves, which on one hand, it can seem very attractive. I remember when we moved to Madrid, I loved the first 3 to 4 months. I just could not believe I wasn't having to get up and go to work, and I could go to the gym whenever I wanted to go to the gym, and, you know, and just enjoy a bit of downtime. And I really did enjoy those first, it probably was the first 4 or 5 months. But then I got actually quite very lonely. It wasn't easy to find people, because the people I met were my husband's colleagues and they were all at work every day, so they weren't around during the day. I went to language courses and I met people through that, but it just takes time to build up a career, to build up a lifestyle, to make new friendships, develop your sort of local community. And then for me, because we didn't have a family at that point, I really did need a career. I really suddenly realised, I think in about month 6, that I was going to have to find myself something in Spain, in Madrid. And I think that's often, you know, for expat partners who relocate without families, that there is a void that needs to be filled in that sense. Yeah. Those who relocate with families, perhaps not so much, because I know from my later experience when we relocated with family, that you do spend the first, you know, year probably settling your children in and being more worried about them and their social lives and helping them to create their new lives. And then actually through them, you create your social life as well. So it actually is easier. But then there's still the question mark over sort of the professional side of life and, you know, what you're going to do. So that's probably the thing. That's how I would say the two differ, you know, from the expat employee and the expat partner's perspective on the relocation experience. I don't know whether you've got anything to add to that, Evelyn.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I think people, when expat partners move overseas, they often have things in mind that they want to do. You know, maybe it's learning a language, or perhaps it's, you know, catching up on projects that they've neglected that are maybe more hobbies than careers, and they're not sure what they want to do. They know that they want to do them, but then they get out to wherever they're living and they realize that they need to create a social life. They realize sometimes, you know, they start learning the language, they go to classes, maybe they start on some of those long neglected projects, but they realize that actually it's not giving them the fulfillment that they want to do. They're valuable things to do in themselves, but they're not what it's all about, and they need to create the social networks, but also they need to find a purpose in life, and that's the part where we try to help them most, is working out what that purpose should be, what appeals to them, what's going to give them their life's fulfillment, and we help them to go and find it. Because that's also quite hard sometimes too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's completely, I was going to touch on this, is I think it's completely necessary. I know, having that, growing up in that type of relationship, you know, often you see how it is and it affects, you know, both your daddy and mom. And I'm always very curious how you deal with that loneliness factor. Because, for example, let's say I'm in a situation where, the older kids have gone, they've gone, they're doing their own thing, they're adults now, and your husband goes to work, and you're left alone. What do you do? I mean, how do you make new friends? How do you, move past just TV? Because there's only a certain amount of TV you can watch in a day. and you're in a new environment, even if it's English speaking or a foreign language, how do you find that fulfillment and purpose that you have? Because how do you even know who to meet? You know, make friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, as Louise mentioned before, when you have younger kids, getting out and meeting new people is really easy. Particularly, you know, if your kids are going to an international school, which lots of families choose to send their kids to international schools because they're going to be moving somewhere else or whatever. So if you're in that environment where you have exposure to expats, or if you're already conversant in the language and your kids are going to local school, then you find that naturally you start speaking to people at school and you've got this common bond of your children to kind of ease the way into friendships. But if you don't have kids, or if your kids have left home, it can be a lot more difficult. There are expat groups for people who want to get out there in a lot of countries. I always say that you should pick things that interest you. If you already know the kinds of things that you really enjoy, you should explore those in the country where you are, because again, it's about that common bond. If you do something completely random that you're not really interested in, chances are you're not going to find people that are like-minded doing similar things.
Right.
But it can be difficult. I'm quite introverted. I could
spend no way.
I am. Yeah. I could spend a lot of time behind my computer and be quite happy. So I do have to make myself get out and do things and meet people and create that social environment for myself. Okay. What about you, Louise?
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this earlier today and thinking one of my regrets probably right from the beginning when we first moved to Madrid, and I would only know this now retrospectively, but I signed up for, you know, language courses, but I did the, well, actually I went to the university to do one, and it was a number of hours every day. And that kind of got me into a group of expats, actually, because it was university, they were all much younger, so they were students, they were 17, 18-year-olds, and I was quite a bit older, I think I was 30 at that point. And I spent my time doing that, but I didn't make a huge amount of progress with the language. And now, looking back at it, what I would have done would have gone and done a complete immersion. It would have been hell, probably, but I would have, you know, learned to speak the language much more quickly, and then also, you know, been able to immerse myself in groups that, yeah, were interesting to me, and then you know, hopefully met people through that. And I think often people don't do that. A lot of people living in Lisbon, they do their hour a week, 2 hours a week Portuguese. Yeah, that's not enough to get yourself to fluent. If that's the only connection you have with the language, you know, you've got to be doing it more than that every day. And so now, with hindsight, I would, you know, that could be one of my ways in, you know, get yourself into a good immersion course, learn the language, and then get yourself into interest groups in that language to consolidate it. That would have made, I think, a big difference for me.
Yeah, it's good. I think what you're saying, you know, this is, I don't know if you're, how familiar you are with Internations.
Yes.
So I'm a member, and I mean, I haven't been as involved as I want to, but I've met some cool people through that. But it seems every time I go, I do meet, you know, expat partners and people, you know, who are just, you know, bonded with some sort of activity, right? So I think that helps with a purpose. And I've always been always empathetic, just because I've seen it from the outside, but I've never actually lived the life the way both of you have. And I'm always, you know, whenever my mom went through it, I was always looking at it and just wondering, you know, what that was like. Because I was always either in school or away or, you know, just something. So it was always some sort of activity, but having to give up something and then just staying, you know, at home, it's always been at the back of my mind, but I never knew. You know, I didn't even know what to say. You know, I wasn't sure, you know, if I said anything and that would help at all. So,
and the other thing is that so many partners, they'll move every 3 to 4 years. And
yes,
it's quite interesting having that conversation as people get towards moving on. You know, there's kind of some excitement and you know, positive anticipation about where they're going to next.
Yes.
Place. But also there's often the, oh, now I've got to do it all again. I've got to start zero. You know, everything goes back to zero, and I've got to go out and do, you know, it's tough. It is tough in that respect.
Okay. So staying on this topic of extra partners, and something that you touched on earlier, you know, both of you met, you were just like, no way, that's not the way expert partners are. So you conducted some research. I believe you said it was over 300 expert partners, and that was in 2012. Yeah. Can you talk to me about what you found and how that inspired your work?
Yeah, well, as we said before, we felt that, you know, the choices about career, about work and fulfillment that expat partners make are much more complex than just simply, are you legally permitted to work in a particular country? And it turns out that that's exactly the case. It's about a whole host of factors. In addition to visa is obviously important, because if someone says you can't work, that kind of limits your options work-wise. But there's a whole host of other factors that affect people's decision-making process. It's language, it's culture, it can be salary levels or recognition of professional status. There's a whole host of practical issues, childcare, your partner's travel schedule, the fact that you're not sure how long you're going to be in a particular place. So it actually is a very, what we found is that it's a very complex and highly individual decision. And we also discovered that choice isn't always what it seems. A lot of partners choose, and I've got doing the inverted commas with my fingers here, not to work, because they know that their options are going to be limited by their circumstances. You know, they understand that someone's got to stay at home to look after the kids and make sure that they get to school on time and blah, or, you know, they're not comfortable with the childcare options that are available to them. So they choose, but for them, it doesn't always feel like it really is a choice. We also looked a little bit at how fulfilled partners felt. And while we didn't delve into this aspect of it in as much depth as we probably should have in retrospect, we didn't really look at correlations. But one of the stunning statistics that we found was that of people who described their personal way of, or their personal feeling about where they were as either unfulfilled or very unfulfilled, 79% of those weren't working. And actually, I think understanding the complexity and then realizing that career was so much more complicated just made us... It made us realize that we had to think about career and fulfillment in a really much more broad way when we're working with expat partners, and look at really the whole person and a much wider concept of where they find their purpose in life. Luis, gotcha. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, just to say that, you know, the big, you know, right at the beginning when we started analysing and asked the question, do you think you'd like to work while you're abroad or not? 78% said they did in some form. So, you know, most people, you know, majority of expat partners and other studies have found that too, do want to work in some form, but it's just, as Evelyn said, finding something that fits.
And most of them have been working as well. I think something like 80% of them have been working before they relocate overseas.
Yeah. So then it comes down to, you know, helping them to define, well, having to think through what career means to them in its broadest sense. So it's not necessarily a 9-to-5 paid job in a corporate environment. You know, I think people relocate abroad and often think in their minds, well, I'll just pick up with my career somehow here. And they have that, you know, like I was in marketing before, I'm going to do marketing here. But actually that might not be possible, and you might have to think out of your box and think differently about how you can apply your skills from home to the new situation and circumstances.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that I have, and this is something that just popped in my head. Is it possible to maintain your professional career as an expat partner? Because I have... I noticed the laughs there. I'm just curious because I every 3 years.
Yeah, I think in a few of the people who responded to our survey had done that and said it was, and perhaps they were just fortunate in the field. I think if you work in, for example, education, often that's quite, I'm not going to say simple, but it's easier because you can find international schools, universities. Have an open, you know, more chance of finding a role in those environments internationally. If you're a doctor, perhaps in some countries, and others you can't because your qualifications aren't recognised. Lawyers, often we find lawyers just can't because they've trained in one legal system, and you know, that doesn't transfer. So it really does depend on the sort of professional career they're starting with and relocating with. But I would say, it's perhaps not create, or it's perhaps not continuing the exact status you had before, but there are ways, if you start opening your mind and thinking differently, that you can create professionally international career. You know, something that moves with you. But you might have to think differently and challenge yourself to think differently.
Yeah, and I was going to say exactly the same, maybe the same thing in a slightly different way. It's about expectations of what you want for your career, because I would say that with every time you move, if you're looking to continue on a career that is on a particular path, so, you know, let's say you're in marketing, if you want to continue on a career path that includes a very traditional form of career advancement, every time you move countries, it becomes exponentially more difficult to do that. But if you're looking at a career where it's maybe more of an accumulation of skills and applying your skills in different ways to and even develop new skills to do different things rather than have that traditional career ladder type of career, then it's absolutely possible to maintain it as you move around.
Okay, no, it's good. I mean, sometimes I watch TV. So one of the shows I watch is The Good Wife, and I don't know why I watch it, but it's a good show. But the thing that happened was, her husband was a state's attorney. He got into legal problems. She was on this path to being an incredible lawyer. She had to stop that for several years, and then she came back. She had to support the family once he left. And then that was one of the reasons I was asking the question is, I know in certain countries there are legal rights, you have to do that. But when you come back home, or your passport country, do people pick up where they left off, or is it that did they find that they have to resign? Because I've seen it in both ends. My mom was able to pick up initially after the first move, but then she decided to resign when my youngest was born. So it's I'm just curious whether in your research you found that people were willing to go back to their work, having that idea that they're not going to get the promotion that they were initially on track to get, but you know it's still the same work that they were familiar with, whether it's 3 years ago or not.
We didn't really research that aspect of it, the returning home aspect of it, but anecdotally what we see among partners is that it varies. Some companies, some organizations are quite good about saying you can take a 3-year leave of absence and come back and you can step into your job. And, you know, a lot of, for people coming from Europe in particular, often those rights to return to jobs are protected by the legal system in the country. Some people are able to do that. For a lot of people, it's quite difficult because unless they make a really conscious effort to keep up, then it can be quite difficult to step back in. If their rights aren't protected, they often find that it is difficult to come back into the workplace at the same level because they've got this what for a lot of people is a kind of inexplicable gap in their resume and their CV. So, you know, employers are looking at it and going, what were you doing for 3 years? And then for a whole load of people, you know, the initial 3-year assignment turns into, you know, instead of going home, they go somewhere else instead. So what was 3 years away from your career becomes six or ten. And, you know, at some point you have to say, I'm not going back to that.
No, exactly. All right, so just a few more questions here before we wrap up, and I ask you the million-dollar question, which is how you use your difference to make a difference. But I want to know more about the kids component. So What is it like being a mom and raising children in different parts of the world and seeing them grow and seeing them adapt to all these cultures? How do you talk to them? How do you deal with the changes? How do you do all that?
Shall I go first, Louise?
Yeah, first. I was tempted to say ladies first, and then both of you are ladies. So I was like, whoever goes.
For me, my kids, as you know, are only just now living in one of their passports. They've both got two passports, and I think technically could have three, but there are only so many passports I feel like renewing in 1 year, so not doing that. But they've always lived overseas until now, so wherever we've been has been their home. I guess maybe because of my exposure to the concept of third culture kids and understanding well, what the challenges and advantages of being a third culture kid are, I've really encouraged my kids to embrace their differences. I don't know if that's always been successful. this time moving with a 15-year-old is an entirely different experience than moving with younger kids. It's really interesting to look at them versus their peers who have never moved overseas. And I can see that they are very different kids as a result of their experiences. They see the world differently. They approach problems differently. Moving with a 15-year-old has been challenging, and she'd kill me if she heard me saying this, but we did ruin her life for a while. But because she's had that experience, she's been absolutely amazing. In fact, this is kind of my proud mummy moment. I'm so proud of both of them in the way that at relatively difficult ages they've embraced their situation. They've got on with it. They've made friends. They've adapted to a new school and done really, really well. And I think their ability to do that is at least in part because of the experiences that they've had before. So, does that answer your question?
I feel like I'm not a parent yet, but I'm always looking at the other side because I know what it's like being the kid, but there's obviously a different dynamic, being the parent, and just seeing the changes that I can imagine that you see. I was just curious because, when everyone moves and everyone in global transition, there's always the expat. Feel something, the expat partner feels something, the expat kids feel something. So I always wanted to make sure I cover every area. So
Yeah. Good.
All right. Rapid fire questions here before it's the last one. What has been your favorite country so far?
Please, you can go first.
You go first. While you think of the answer.
For me, Portugal. I mean, we were in Portugal for 9 years, and it has a big part of our hearts, really, particularly because my youngest daughter was born there. And so she was born on the island of Madeira, and we have to visit that at least once a year because that's her home, she says. That's where I'm from. That's where I'm from. If she's ever asked, that's where she's from. And she definitely feels a link back to that. And Portugal, yeah. Spain, we weren't there for so long. So Portugal, really, it's our second home. Yeah.
All right. What about you?
For me, I think if you asked anyone in my family, the country that we would most like to experience again would be Switzerland, because we had such a wonderful time there, and it's a beautiful country, and lakes, mountains. We're really outdoorsy people, so we loved all of that. But in terms of maybe the most life-changing country, the experience that was most broadening, that would have to be China. We lived in Shanghai for 3 years, and it's the most difficult place we moved to. But it was also the place where it was a bit of a life-changing experience. And after all the challenges of the first few months, we did end up absolutely loving it. Having said that, I'm not sure we move back.
Hey, you know, it's one of those you learn, and it makes you a better person. And then, you know, that's had its phase in its life. So there you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, before I go to the best, your favorite food, which is, I'm giving you a little cheat here for you to cheat. Think about your favorite food right now. Is which countries do you support during the World Cup?
We're a rugby family. The Rugby World Cup, and it's a bit of a contentious issue because, you know, my husband was born in New Zealand, but is very much an Australian, and Scotland is not so great at rugby, so we end up with this hierarchy of teams that we support, and as they get knocked out, then we move on to the next one, which sounds really terrible, but it kind of works for us.
And for us, it's always the UK, with the exception of my youngest one, who it's Portugal.
Are you also a rugby family or a football
family? No, football. I'm talking
Cristiano
soccer.
Ronaldo. So she's a fan,
yes,
of Cristiano Ronaldo.
He was born on the island of Madeira. So.
Yeah, he was too. I'm a little. I you know, Nigeria doesn't often get far in the World Cup, so I usually go for Holland, and I'm a huge Ronaldo fan, so I end up doing that. But it's, yeah, I don't know. For some reason, the Dutch have always been a favorite of mine. So, all right,
well,
cool.
Depending on the sport for us, we'll also sometimes embrace some of the countries that we've lived in as well. So,
exactly.
If there are none of our home countries, then we'll go for a Swiss or a Chinese. Or, yeah, we've got lots of choices.
Yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, I mean, I'm very lucky during the World Cup because I can say I have some ties to that country. And you know. But okay, so we had that moment there. What's your favorite food? Which country has the best food, in your opinion?
For me, I'm a huge fan of Asian food of all sorts. I love Thai food. I prefer spicier foods. So Sichuan food from China, Indonesian food, love it all.
Okay.
And I have to say, in Portugal, well, bacalhau is our least favorite, I think. But fresh fish, I mean, in Portugal, yeah. Go down to the beach and get some fresh grilled fish with salad. Fantastic, yeah.
I think we should move Portugal the way you are right now. It seems like it seems like it's got a big piece of your heart. So hopefully, yeah. Okay. All right. How do both of you ladies use your difference to make a difference?
I guess as we said before, we've got a fundamental belief that for expat partners, expat life is an opportunity. It's a gift. And I guess that is our difference. It separates us from a lot of what you hear out there for expat partners. A lot of what's out there already is about overcoming the losses, overcoming the challenges. And of course, that's important, but we think it's about a lot more than that. It's about embracing life, looking for the opportunities and running with them. And how we use that is we don't just help expat partners to survive their experience. We want to help them to see the possibilities for transformation and to make the most of them. And it's really about, I guess if I had to put it in just a few words, we use our difference to help expat partners to think bigger about their experience.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love it. That's good. It's good.
Luis, do you want to add?
No, I've said that very, very elegantly. I guess perhaps it would be our mindset, would be, yeah, in a word, mindset, which is about opportunity and personal development, using the whole experience as a growth and personal development one.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, you know, I've certainly enjoyed more. I was taking notes because I was I'm going to talk to my mom after this. Because we're on our last post, and she got posted here to United States. So this is the first time we're actually in the same continent.
Fantastic.
For a long time, but
is,
you know,
she in New York, or?
She's in DC. I'm in New York. So yeah. But and then my, you know, I'm 25. My younger, I have a younger was 24, and then the youngest is 15. So everyone's pretty much mature at this point. And I, you know, I'm always thinking, oh, what is she going to do? What are we going to do? So I was taking notes and taking everything down, you know, because, you know, she left the business back home as well. So this is such a timely interview. So I'll give her a call right after this. But where can we find out more about what you're doing, and what specifically are you doing to support expat partners right now as we close?
Okay, well, thanks, Tayo. Well, as you know, we work with expat partners who relocated abroad due to their partner's employment, business, or perhaps to their partner's native country. And in our answer to Tayo's wonderful questions, we've talked about the challenges involved in relocating as an expat partner. And, you know, we really recognise these challenges because, as expat partners ourselves, we've experienced them all. And we want to inspire partners to really utilise the expat experience as an opportunity for personal and professional growth and development. So we've developed the Thrive Programme of Support for Expat Partners, and we've designed it to help them create expat lives that they love. Now, it's delivered as an online group coaching programme, which means that partners can join us from all over the world and work together to identify what they want to create in their lives abroad, and then work to achieve it. All that people need to join us is a reliable internet connection, a computer or iPad, tablet, and hey presto, they're all set up to go. So the next programme begins on March 3rd. And this is a really timely interview, so thank you very much, Tayo, because running through February, we're hosting our free masterclass video series, Live Your Best Life Abroad. And so we'd love to invite any expat partners listening to join us for this series of free videos. They're going to get to meet us again virtually and get started on thinking about how they can create their lives they love abroad. They can access the masterclass series by registering at thrivingabroad.com/live-your-best-life. And I think, Tayo, you said you were going to place some information near to this recording. So hopefully, Tayo, you can place that link there. Then they can access this through that link. So we really look forward to welcoming people to this free video series, and also invite them to join our community on Facebook. It's called Thriving Abroad, and we'd love to have you join our conversation there.
Thank you so much, ladies. This has been absolutely fun, and I can't wait for this to come out. This is going to be fantastic. Lots of nuggets of wisdom. So thank you. Fantastic to have you on here.
Thank you so much for your time today, Tayo, in interviewing us. It's been great fun, a great conversation. Bye for now.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.